Hello and welcome to another episode of Amon Sheeran's Pirate Radio Podcast. On today's episode, we have another illustrious guest, Jordan Lauterbach. He is a stand-up comedian, and he's also a running journalist, sports writer, a little bit of everything. So, Jordan, thank you very much for coming on today.
Hey, man. Thanks so much. I like your shirt.
Thanks. Yes, Syosset Athletics, and that's actually where I wanted to start. You used to work for the Syosset Patch, right?
Yeah. Man, you have done your research.
I have done my research, and I'll tell you why. Because my freshman year, and I want to know if you remember this, the Syosset boys freshman team won the Brown Cross Country Invitational in 2009 or 2010, and you interviewed that team at Syosset High School. Do you remember that?
You know what? I may have. It was definitely 2010 because 2009 I was not working for for Pat yet. I was still in college. But I grew up in Syosset, so that's why I said, nice shirt.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I started my career. I went to CW Post. I wanted to be a radio guy. I wanted to be like Mike and Mad Dog on The Fan. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I started doing. And then I ran the radio station there at CW Post. After college, I got out, and I really didn't go for radio as much as I probably should have, or as much as I thought I would. So I joined up with the Syosset Patch. I was at Patch, different towns, not always Syosset, but I was at Patch for about 2 years, and then I joined up with Newsday. But yeah, I remember covering track and field, and I did everything there, talking with Coach Sessa and all you guys over there.
Yeah,
and that was easy for me because I lived 5 minutes away from the high school. So it was
perfect.
Fun.
Yeah, the only reason I bring that up and I remember that is because I was on that freshman team that won the Brown Invitational. So we go back a long way.
Very nice.
Yeah, you brought up Coach Sessa. What was your impression of him?
He was one of the first. He was the first coach that I ever spoke to when I was covering track and field. I didn't know much about the sport when I started. When I went to Pats, they said, hey, you have to cover everything, not just football and basketball and stuff like that. And I was fine with that. I just, I needed someone to point me in the right direction. So I remember the first time I met him, I walked up to him, and we just started talking about the sport, and he started talking about, how it was a cardiovascular sport in nature, and I just remember him being tremendously helpful, and being one of the guys at first. It kind of taught me about the sport because I wasn't a runner in high school. I wasn't a runner in college. I didn't even really know anything about track and field. So I needed a lot of, for example, I didn't know until I started at Patch that you guys ran in the winter.
Right. The indoor.
You guys just took the winter off. I didn't know winter track was a thing. So I kind of had to learn that. I was like, oh, you guys go inside. And now, of course, I've been at probably 10,000 indoor track meets.
Right.
So I know it very well. But I didn't know that. And he was a guy that was hugely influential in, teaching me about this sport.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, he's a very upfront guy. And he'll be honest with people that are honest with him and always looking to help people in that way. So I'm glad you got that experience out of him. Obviously, he was a tough coach, but for people off the team, he's always been a upfront guy. So I'm glad that worked out.
And he built a heck of a program. I mean, you guys won championships upon championships upon championships. I don't remember him when I went to Syosset High School. I don't remember if he was the coach or not. Mm-hmm. You'd have to ask him. But
yeah.
I know the program was great because I know that I remember all the track and field kids used to wear T-shirts all around, and they always had a bunch of championships. and they were always talking about, you know, the championships, and I used to think, oh, they must be pretty good, and they were.
Yeah.
And that was, and you were right in the middle of that, but that was some national powerhouse at Syosset.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think he started in the late 90s, so I'm guessing he was just starting out or somewhere in his tenure.
Yeah, he probably was. I was at Syosset High School from 02 to 06. I graduated in 06.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's interesting you bring that up. You were never a runner, but slowly but surely you become one of the premier, I guess, journalists for high school running in Nassau and Suffolk too. So you're a great Twitter follower. How did you go about learning about the sport and becoming one of the best people in terms of getting results out and covering the sport in general?
Well, thank you. And the best way to do anything is to do it. You know, right. Going to college is great. Going to, you know, journalism school, whatever, is phenomenal. But I didn't know anything about the sport. I remember my first story about, like, a meet. I went to a meet, like a dual meet, a spring dual meet at Syosset High School for Pat. And it wasn't much of a story because I didn't really understand what dual meets were yet. But when I got to Newsday, my first fall with Newsday, someone else was on cross country. So I did other sports. I did badminton and gymnastics. And then in the winter, they gave me winter track, and they said, you're going to be the winter track guy. And I said, all right. And I had no idea what I was doing. My first track meet that I really covered, because I really didn't do any track meets at Patch. I just did like features and stuff after the fact. But it was the Bishop Laughlin Games on the Saturday before Christmas.
At the Armory?
At the Armory. So imagine a 26-year-old kid who knows nothing about track and field, didn't even realize this was even done in the wintertime up until about 2 years ago, going to the Armory. And I just remember walking in that door, the glass doors of the track, and just being so overwhelmed. And thank goodness I had a photographer with me that day who had photographed high school track and field for, you know, years and years at the paper, and saw my, you know, deer in the headlight look and kind of, you know, pointed me in the right direction and said, you know, hey, kid, you look a little lost. So he took me to the results sheet and he said, first of all, and I'll go off this aside here. So, you know, track and field meets at the Armory, they go on all day.
Right. Literally all day. Yeah.
Literally all day. Like they start at 8 in the morning and they end around 10 at night, sometimes even later. So I saw it starts at 8 in the morning. So I showed up at 8 in the morning, which I quickly learned was not the thing to do, because many of the varsity races or the fast heats don't start till around 1 or 2.
Right.
So I was basically just sitting there for hours, you know, interviewing kids in really slow heats because I just had no idea what I was doing. I mean, thank goodness I didn't make a mistake and say that a kid won just because they won like their heat or something.
Right.
You know, 1600 meters, they run 100 heats of that thing. And I'm just trying to get everyone who comes across the finish line who looks like they might be from Long Island. So that was wild, but so that year was tough. The first year was really tough. The Armory was a trial by fire, probably not the greatest place to make my covering debut. I probably should have done something a little bit smaller, but we didn't know. You know, and it was hard, and I was really intimidated by it for a couple weeks, but as the season kind of progressed, I kind of learned. I talked to some coaches who really helped me. A few that are still great sources to me today that I'll call up and just be like, hey man, what does this mean? And then I went to some of those smaller meets at Suffolk Community College or St. Anthony's, and those were all Long Islanders and smaller, so that kind of helped me. But it really was, I learned by being there, and it was, there was no thing, it was nothing other than just, you know, you do it 100 times, you know, this will be like my 8th or 9th year coming up. Whenever this year starts,
right?
You know, you do it 100 times, and you realize, you know, what to do. Yeah. I kind of taught myself with the help of a lot of people. You ask questions. You know, I wasn't afraid to ask the dumb question. Like a kid would say something, and I'd go, "What did that mean?"
Right. Yeah, that's definitely the best way to learn. And it sounds like they really threw you into the deep end with a Saturday meet at the Armory. There's no better experience than that, I imagine, just because of the chaos that is the Armory.
Yeah, and you know what? It was probably good. And they didn't know that they were sending me into the deep end. They, you know, my bosses just saw a track meet, and I was the track guy, and they sent me. Mm-hmm. But it was good because, you know, you have to swim if you're in the deep end.
Right, you don't have a choice.
And, you know, there's no way to learn how to cover. There's no class to take on how to cover a big time track meet. You kind of just have to do it. You have to make your small mistakes. Hopefully they're small. In my case, they were. You have to, you know, get some angry emails from parents going, "Hey, why didn't you go over here? Or why didn't you go over here?" And you have to, you know, kind of take all that in and say, all right, what did I do wrong? What did I do right? And now I go to the Armory and it's like, no big deal. But those first couple meets, oh boy, were they stressful. I mean, especially waking up at 5:30 or 6 in the morning to go win. I mean, luckily I don't do that now because I realize that most of the stuff I have to write about doesn't happen till the afternoon anyway, but man, that was, and I was taking the train in, so it took me forever to get there too. I don't do that now. I drive in and I park, you know, if I can get parking down the street, I do that. But so it was 1.5-hour train ride in both ways, and you know, something that I really didn't know what I was doing.
So, right.
But I learned pretty quickly. I would say I got on the beat late December. By February, I kind of felt like I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I can only imagine it's stressful for a runner who knows the sport and their first meet at the Armory. For someone who didn't know the sport, it's probably tenfold as stressful. But that's great that you learned like trial by fire. Do you have a favorite meet you like to cover every year? Is there something that stands out?
I really like cross country.
Okay.
I really like the, if you want one meet, I really like all the championships,
mm-hmm.
but if I had to pick one meet, I really like the way they do the Suffolk divisional meet, and you're okay. A Nassau kid. So, I mean, you probably know just from having friends or whatever,
right?
But the Suffolk divisional meet with in cross country in terms of stakes, it's not tremendously big. It's very early on in the postseason. But here's why I like it. And maybe this is just the pure sportsman in me. But they line everyone up, and everyone runs at the same time. So it doesn't matter what division you're in. It doesn't matter what class you're in. Of course, afterwards, that's all separated later. But in terms of the a regional, you know, race, you really get a chance to see, because, you know, one of the, you know, things about cross country and track and field, which is good on one hand, I guess, but not good on others, is sometimes getting the right kids in the same race doesn't happen all the time, just because maybe it's the state qualifiers and someone is in Class C, and the other good kid on Long Island is in Class A. So, yeah, you'll get their times you know, together. You'll get their time to compare, but you won't get a race between the two of them until maybe the Federation meet or, you know, some of the big invitationals early in the year. Suffolk doesn't do that. Suffolk has everyone run against each other. And while the stakes are not as high as they are a week later at the state qualifiers, I do kind of like just having that visual of, all right, you know, here's, you know, a Class D kid, maybe it's Cal Lewis last year who went to Shelter Island and won a couple state championships in that division against a really good Class A kid. And, you know, let's just line them up and run them with, you know, I really like that. That's why, you know, the St. Anthony's meet in the spring is really good because they have that stacked 800 where they specifically try to get, you know, everyone on Long Island who's good. One of the best races I ever saw was an 800 meters that Mike Brannigan of Northport won years and years ago. Actually, ESPN was there because they did a Mike Brannigan.
They did a special on it. Right.
For E60, which was very good. And that was one of the days, but it had a couple Northport kids in it. It had Luke Germanakis, who was the kid from
Lynbrook.
Lynbrook,
yep.
who won the state title in the 600 in the winter. I forget what year that was. It was probably
like 13, 14.
14, probably 13 or 14. You know, because it's got to be 12. It's got to be 13 on if it's the spring.
Right.
So it was probably 14. But those are the races I love. The races where just every good kid from Long Island is in it, and it's just, you know, shoot the gun and let them go.
Yeah, you brought up some really good points. First thing I want to touch on is Mikey Brannigan is probably my favorite athlete I've ever seen run. Just the way he goes at it is absolutely amazing. I was at the state meet when Germanakos won the 600. But I also really like the point you brought up with what Suffolk does in cross country, because that gives a great preview of like the upcoming county meet and the state qualifier. And I wish Nassau did that more, because you really get to see everyone run at the same time. And if two kids, let's say I win Class A and Class 2, which is Class B, a separate race, is like 2 seconds behind me, we never really know who would have won necessarily, because it's two different races, even though the times are different. So I think putting them head-to-head makes a lot more sense in that way.
Yeah, that's the problem with times that, you know, people have said to me, and I've kind of gleaned just from watching, even though I've never run. You know, times are great, and it's good to see on MileSplit. I've used the compare athlete function on MileSplit all the time. But until you are at the line and you look to your left and there's that guy, or you're coming down the final 100 at Sunken Meadow and he's right behind you, it's just a different, you know, you're athletes. You're not mathematicians. You're not, you know, you're athletes. You want the competition. You want, I've never spoken to an athlete that has told me anything differently. You want the next best guy right beside you with, you know, 1,500 meters to go in a 3K, and, you know, let's go.
Yeah, and that ends up making the times that much faster because you have something to compete against. So I definitely agree with that. So that was all the questions I had in terms of the running journalism, but that's not all there is. You are also a really great stand-up comic. I've seen you a few times at Governors, so I wanted to get into that a little bit too.
Absolutely.
All right. So I went to a few open mics. I tried out stand-up comedy. It wasn't necessarily my thing, but I had a lot of fun trying it. What made you go to your first open mic?
Well, I started I took a class. I took a class at Governors. I had always wanted to be a stand-up comic. When I was a kid, I was really into Seinfeld. Seinfeld's my hero. And he still is. I just got his book for my birthday a couple weeks ago. I can't wait to read it. So he's always been my hero. I've wanted to be a stand-up comic since I was probably 5 or 6 years old. My parents used to watch Seinfeld, and I wasn't really allowed to watch it when I was super young. But I would go to bed, and these were the early episodes of Seinfeld, where the opening scene was always him on a stage at a comedy club talking, you know, telling jokes, doing his set.
Mm-hmm.
So I always would, like, kind of go to bed right when it was coming on. So that was the only part I would see. And I was always so fascinated. What was he doing? Why was he making people laugh? You know, I think I used to play stand-up comic. I had a, you know, a little toy microphone when I was probably 5 or 6. And I used to, you know, I was just doing gibberish in my room. I wasn't doing, you know, good bits at 5. But, or maybe I was. I was like, what's the deal with apples? So I always wanted to be that. But then when I was in high school at Syosset, I was on WKWZ,
mm-hmm. the radio station
there, and that basically made my high school experience. I was the sports director. I did the play-by-play on the football games, the basketball games. I met my best friend. I met there. He's my best friend to this day. He and I, you know, used to be co-hosts. And that's how I met him. We were co-hosts on the radio together. And, you know, here we are. I'm out of high school probably 10, 12 years. He's out of high school probably 9 or 10. And so I met all my friends down there. And I really got into radio. But stand-up was always in the back of my mind. It was always something I wanted to do. And I remember in late high school kind of finding myself at a crossroads, where I was like, do I be a stand-up comic or do I be a sports radio talk show host? And which is what I wanted to do. But then in around 2013, I decided, you know what? I'm just going to do both.
Why not?
And I took a class by a man named John Trusen, you may know,
mm-hmm.
At Governor's. And it changed my life. And I didn't know if I'd be funny. I didn't know if I'd be good at it. I thought I would be. I hoped I would be. But I had some pretty, you know, good sets early, so that gave me a lot of confidence. The club liked me. John Trusen, who was booking the club, liked me. They invited me to be on some of the professional shows after I finished the class. I actually took the class 3 times just because I liked it so much. And then, I don't know, a year later, they gave me a weekend just because I kept working up and up and kept getting better. So the first time I was on stage, I had been in the class for about 6 weeks. About a year prior, I had done set to the bar, like a bar show with my friends, but they were the only audience, and I didn't really see it as a jumping off point that, you know, this was going to be something I was really going to do starting now. It was kind of just to see what it felt like, because I had never been on stage with a microphone before, even though the side of the bar is hardly a stage, but
right.
Sometimes it is in our business. And, I loved every second of it, and it's been a real bummer because I haven't been on stage in 7 months now with this COVID-19 pandemic. But, it's been my favorite thing that I have ever done in a comic.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing to watch, especially someone like you who obviously enjoys it and loves making people laugh. It's great, and I definitely miss going to shows. Governor's is just so much fun on the weekends, and you'll see people pop in, like Colin Quinn's been there, a bunch of different people have been there, and so it's really just great to watch.
And Colin's been very good to me. He's been very nice to me. I've met him a couple times. He's been very complimentary. I brought him up on stage as a surprise. It wasn't even like a build show. I brought him up on stage once. You know, Governors has 3 clubs. They have Governors in Levittown, they have Brokerage in Belmore, and they have McGuire's in Bohemia. So that's been a great, you know, way for me to not only get on stage, but get on stage a lot. And it's been great. And I'm waiting out whatever this is here. And I just can't. I'm itching to get back on stage. And I've traveled the country. I've played other places. I've played Indianapolis. I've played Connecticut. I've played New Jersey. Certainly, I love traveling and doing this as well. But, you know, I do most of my work at the Governor's Clubs.
Mm-hmm. So what's it like on the road? Do you have any, like, crazy road stories that people hear about? Anything?
No, I'm not really a crazy guy. Right. Some people are crazy on the road. My favorite hobby is reading.
Okay.
So I'm not tremendously... If you follow my Instagram, at JL Comic, and I haven't done it a lot because some of the books that I read I don't tweet about because they're, you know, not books, you know, they're political, whatever,
right.
And I don't want people, you know, I'm apolitical in terms of the public eye, so, you know, but I do post my non-political books on my Instagram. And so when I go on the road, they're not all overnights.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the road is driving. It's a lot of, you know, truck stop McDonald's and stuff, which I don't mind at all. But for example, like right before the shutdown, Super Bowl weekend, I went with one of my good friends, John Ziegler, who you might have seen. We went to Indianapolis. We went to a club there called Crackers. We had a lot of fun. And we, you know, your days on the road are pretty boring. You know, you walk around, you go to a mall, you go to the movies, you go to eat, then it's kind of time to go to the show. And then maybe you'll be invited out by, you know, patrons, like, oh, come party with us. And you always say you're going to go, but you never go.
It's the Irish goodbye.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, hey, I'll meet you there. I have another show, but maybe after the second show. And sometimes you don't even have a second show, but you just feel better. Bad.
Yeah.
But like, I don't want to, you know.
No, that's definitely fair.
And if I've done two shows, I want to go home. I'm tired. I've been on stage for a composite hour. If I'm headlining, I've been on stage for almost two.
Right.
I want to go home. I have reading to do.
Yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do. I definitely get
last
that.
Last time I went to Indianapolis, I had a I don't know how much of a soda drinker you are.
I drink. I like ginger ale. Everything.
Coke. Oh well, I'm a big Diet Coke.
Diet Coke
is my favorite drink in the world.
Like Mike Francesa.
Yeah, and it's actual poison, which is not good.
Not great.
It's not good when people are like, oh, you're drinking that Diet Coke, it'll probably kill you. I'm like, it's good. But I had this, I don't know if you tried this, they just came out with this about a year and a half ago. Have you tried the orange vanilla Coke?
Absolutely not. I have not. Is it good?
Now, are you against this, or have you just not come across it?
No, I haven't seen it. I tried it.
It's great.
It's great? Okay.
If you remember, like, creamsicles, like in like elementary school, mm-hmm. You get a creamsicle at lunch. It tastes like a creamsicle. My girlfriend calls it a dessert soda, which is
right.
Very true. But it is phenomenal. So I found a 20-ounce bottle, and this is how exciting the road gets. Trust me. I found a 20-ounce bottle at like a truck stop with bulletproof glass across the street from my hotel.
Wow.
So that was kind of weird to see, but I was like, let's get the soda. So I had the soda waiting for me in the hotel room, my kind of post-set celebration. I was going to have my soda and my chocolate bar, read a little of my book, and go to bed. It was going to be great. I could not stop telling people at the club. I'm like, you know what? Thanks for the invite, but I got a soda waiting at home. So I'm gonna have to not. I think they invited us to go bowling.
That's exciting. Before,
which was very nice. And you know what? If we were different people, we probably would have gone and enjoyed ourselves.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I can only do a half hour at a time. So we're gonna pause it, and we're gonna come right back. Because you want a couple more questions. All right. Thank you. All right. We're back. Sorry we had to cut it off, but we're back. And Jordan was just telling a story about one of his road stories. So
Good to
yeah,
know.
so, you know, I also think that we love when people come up to us, and it's complimentary. We're not saying don't come up to us and you know, don't go out. But my worry is also, you know, I'm this funny guy on stage. I'm not necessarily like that off stage.
Right.
I feel like if I were to go out partying with people, I don't drink. You know, my favorite and one of, I read books and I watch sports. That is all that I do, and that is not an exaggeration. I work, I do stand-up, I read books, I watch sports, and I sleep. I'm not exactly, you know, the super-duper party guy, so I don't want to disappoint people,
right?
You know, when I go out. I kind of feel like, you know, you like me on stage, then you go home and you talk about me on stage, and then you come back.
Yeah, you leave them wanting a little more. Yeah,
I'm not much of a post-show partier.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And it sounds like you got your orange, what is it, orange vanilla Coke?
Orange vanilla Coke, which 20-ounce bottles are very hard to find, and I wasn't going to pass that up to go bowling in Indianapolis.
With some strangers, yeah. Yeah, but that's...
They were very nice. They were awesome people.
No, I believe you.
I don't know. They might be podcast... They might be pirate podcast fans.
Yeah.
And the next time that I go, I don't want them coming to the show and being like, why were you trashing the bowling invite on the podcast?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I'm sure they are fans of you and me. But yeah, that's all you really need, though. Just a good book, good Coke. And some sports. You can't really ask for too much more, I guess.
That's all I want. That's all I've ever wanted.
Yeah. So, that's pretty cool. Yeah, it sounds like you got some good stories. But you mentioned Seinfeld earlier. Who are some of your other comedic influences?
Well, Seinfeld's my hero. And we talked about he's the man that I made me want to be a comic. In terms of influences, you know, John Mulaney is my favorite guy working right now. I've seen him a couple times, and I don't really go to watch other stand-up comics for a couple reasons. One is, you know, I kind of find it hard to sit there. I think an hour is a long time to listen to someone. Mm-hmm. I like when people are doing it for me, but me personally, I kind of find it hard to sit through like an hour of comedy. And also I don't want to subconsciously get something in my head. And then not that I ever consciously steal anything, because trust me, I have enough, you know, stories about art and vanilla Coke of my own to fill an hour.
Right.
But, you know, you do get in scenarios where you think of something and then you're like, oh, wait a minute, that's kind of very similar to that. But there are only a few comics that I have seen or will see live or buy tickets to live. John Mulaney is one. Mike Birbiglia is another. So I am a huge John Mulaney fan. I'm a huge Mike Birbiglia fan. Quick plug, because I don't have anything to plug. His book that came out in June, which was called The New One, which was kind of a companion piece to his Broadway show, which I also saw, is phenomenal. It's probably the best book I've read this year, and I've read a ton of books. So Birbiglia, Mulaney, Seinfeld, probably the top three in terms of, you know, my influences / guys I love. And probably, not to insult any other comics, probably the only three comics that I pay to see. And Chappelle.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you included Chappelle, because he's one of my favorites, too. He's just absolutely amazing at what he does. I forgot
that. Chappelle is amazing to watch.
Yeah, he
just
really is.
Just as a comic, the way he commands the stage, he's mesmerizing. Not only is he very funny and he's very clever, but I think it goes beyond that. Just, even if he's not trying to be funny, his style of speaking to an audience of 200, 300 people is just so mesmerizing and just so good that in terms of stage presence, now I'm no comedic historian by any means, but in terms of stage presence, I can't think of anyone I've ever seen that's been better than him.
No, he's so comfortable. And like you said, he doesn't have to try to be funny, which is incredible. When he does try to be funny, he absolutely knocks it out of the park every time. So he's really fun to watch. I agree. So thank you again so much for coming on. You're a guy that I love to watch on the stage and love to read your stuff, especially on Twitter with covering Nassau Suffolk Track at the high school level, and the Ducks. Can't forget about the Long Island Ducks.
And the Ducks, yes. The Long Island Ducks, which I love baseball. Baseball is probably my favorite sport, though there's a couple in there. I grew up baseball, football guy, kind of 1 and 1A.
Mm-hmm.
I love baseball. There's just something about writing about baseball that's just so much fun. So I love doing the Ducks.
Right. So thank you again for coming on. And I have one last question that I like to ask. I started asking my guests recently to end the podcast. And it's from this Answer the Internet game from KFC Radio. And the question is, if you could have dinner with any dead celebrity or athlete, who would it be?
Oh, wow. Any dead celebrity or athlete? Boy, there's a bunch of them.
It's tough, I know. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, it's a really good question. I love these ones. There's a lot of athletes that I'd love to have dinner with, but they're all alive. You know what? And it's unfortunate because he's recently passed, but I'm going to go with Tom Seaver.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were a big Mets fan. But, yeah, that's a great choice. Yeah.
But that's a phenomenal question. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe George Carlin, too.
George Carlin, yeah. So you got, like, one from the
sports. So if I have to pick an athlete, it would be Tom Seaver, and a comic or celebrity, George Carlin.
All right. Well, thank you again, Jordan. This will be up on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And one last question before I let you go. What do you want your outro song to be?
Oh, my outro song. If you have anything by Hootie and the Blowfish.
No, Darius, I can do whatever. Whatever.
Yeah. Just give me Wagon Wheel by Darius Rucker. That's my all-time favorite song. We'll do that one.
All right. There you have it, folks.